the first thing in the contemplation of one's own death is to not shy away from the fact that this is a matter of course, and that actually age has very little to do with it. Naturally, very old people are bound to die, but young people die too. And so it isn't a matter of saying, oh yes, I'm going to die, but it's 20, 30 years from now. I don't have to worry about it now. Who knows that? Anybody got a written guarantee? It's going to be 20 or 30 years from now? It can be 2 or 3 years from now. It can be 2 or 3 days from now. It can be 2 or 3 minutes from now. How do we know? We don't know anything of that nature. I don't mean that we don't know anything, but of that nature. So we have to take it into account as being part of our life. That's the first thing to do, not to shove it off into the dim distance of the future, which most people do. But it's part of life. And then as we see it part of life, to recognize the dislike of being annihilated, of no longer being there. The world goes on, but I'm not there to experience it. I'm dead. So the mind refuses to like that. If the mind says, oh, that's quite all right, I don't mind. You haven't seen it yet. There's another possibility, that things are not going very well at the moment and one would rather be dead, which is the same thing, only reversed. The craving to be has, as the other side of the same coin, the craving not to be. It's more rare. Most people want to be. But sometimes things are going so badly, everything seems to fall to bits, and then one has the craving not to be. Well, it doesn't help. Which is an important thing to know, because maybe the mind will say, well, that's all right. I don't mind dying. It's okay. I'd rather not be alive. It also doesn't help, because it's just a negative feeling about oneself and one's situation. And the other one is the craving, the wish to be here and to be around and to experience everything. Now, that wish to be here and to be experience everything is that which creates the unrest, the unsteadiness, the lack of feeling secure. It creates all that inner turmoil which sometimes we can feel quite strongly, and other times we can feel it only subliminal when we really pay attention to it. Most people don't feel it at all then. They can't relate to their subtle, more subtle feelings. But it makes people, everybody, makes everybody do what they're doing. And this is something you can check out. Our craving to be makes us, everyone, act accordingly. See and have a look at your daily activities, not in the course, which is supposed to be different, but in your daily life. What do you do? What is it for? What is its purpose? And how happy does it make you, what you're doing? Does it give real satisfaction? Or only if somebody else says, that was good? Does it only give them satisfaction? Or does it give real fulfillment just because of doing it, or does it have an ulterior motive? And the ulterior motive is our craving to be. If we didn't do it, we wouldn't have anything to base our craving on. We wouldn't be. We'd feel bereft. Check it out and see whether that's so. Don't need to believe the Buddha, we don't need to disbelieve. We all we need to check out. Death as such is the ultimate end, everybody thinks. Well, actually it's not. It's a new beginning. What we usually do, we congratulate people on their birthdays, and we congratulate the parents that they have got a new little being there, and we commiserate with people when somebody dies. No reason to do that. One could commiserate with the little being that's being born because it's in for lots and lots of dukkha. And if you remember your teens, you won't have any difficulty remembering lots and lots of dukkha, I'm sure. And if somebody dies, well, there is a chance that this person actually might become enlightened on their deathbed. So we might congratulate them, although we don't know whether they did or not. There's no reason to commiserate. Why do we commiserate with people when somebody dies? Because they want to hang on to that person. It's theirs. It's their mother or father or partner or child or uncle or aunt or whatever it may be. They think they own it. It belongs to them. So something that belongs to them has disappeared. We look at it in totally wrong ways. Now, when we ourselves are ready to die, and it seems that even though the doctors might think that they shouldn't tell people that they're dying, they don't have to. Everybody who's dying knows they're dying. There's no question about it. If one hasn't practiced at all, it's very likely that there is great resistance. However, it does seem that at the very end, that resistance disappears and that there is complete acceptance. In fact, an acceptance which is quite peaceful. Death itself is a peaceful transition. The only reason it becomes non-peaceful is if we react to it. We resent it and reject it. And of course it's not peaceful if we resent it and reject it. And so the thing to do about one's own death is to have a look to see whether one is willing to die now. And if the mind says no, we'll find out why. Why? What is it I want to become that I haven't become yet that makes it so imperative that I don't die yet? And do I actually have any kind of guarantee that this isn't going to happen yet? One presumes that one, if one is still fairly young and healthy, that it isn't happening yet. But there are any number of accidents. This body is very easily destroyed. It doesn't have a great resistance. You have a few bricks fall off a roof right onto the top of your head and you've probably had it. And that's the end. I mean, there are other accidents, obviously, with cars and things, but I mean, even without cars. If I remember rightly, one of the prime ministers of this country disappeared into the ocean. Nobody knew what happened to him. Well, obviously he must have drowned or something. Well, he was gone, you know. So people do go and swim in the ocean. It's a good thing to do. It's very healthy. But, I mean, there's no guarantee that you're going to come out again. So, it's very important to look and see, if I were to die today, why don't I like that idea? What's the dislike? And what am I hanging on to most? And what we're hanging on to most, in most cases, would be the idea that we haven't yet become what we want to be. And in reality, we all are exactly what we ever can be. We just haven't got rid of all the obscurations and all the turmoil which hides that. We all are what we already want to be, but we just haven't noticed it yet. So it's a very important thing to do, because you see what happens if one should actually not be afraid of death, but accept it as a matter of course, totally natural, which it is. It is a matter of course, and it is totally natural. And have no fear of being annihilated. Then one can start living. Because before that, there's always a barrier, a blockage, a fear. It may not work out. Whatever it is we're trying to do, it may not work out. We may not make enough money, we may not be totally healthy, it may not make us happy, we may not become famous, we may not become rich, we may not become old, we may not be whatever it is. Constantly there's something that we may not be if we do this or that, which is also a reason for indecision. But it's mostly a reason for craving to do and to be. So, if we're no longer afraid of dying, so what could possibly be wrong? Everything's fine. Every day is just as it is. That's all. Another thing that which happens when we're not afraid of dying is that we get up in the morning with a great feeling of joy, that there is another day in which to practice and to become enlightened. Just be very happy about that. And one can forget how hot it is. And one is very joyful about having another day to practice. Most people get up in the morning with the thought of, oh no, it couldn't be that time again. Or something similar. But it is. It is that time again. And there is another day. So this other day, which then happens in the morning, is like a present, like a gift, which we didn't have to expect and take for granted. Everybody expects that they're going to get up tomorrow morning and expects to be the same person again that they were today. Well, all one can say to that is nonsense. We cannot be the same person twice. It's not possible. We have totally different thoughts. We breathe differently because our breath is impermanent. Our cells have fallen apart and come together again. We have different emotions. We can't be the same person twice. So, and we can't expect to be awake up tomorrow morning and have another day. We do. We take it for granted. We've been waking up for so many days now, so many years, that we just think, well, that's the way it's always going to be. But it won't. One day it won't. We don't wake up in the morning. If we're lucky, we've fallen asleep in the night time and that's it. My granddaughter, who's now 5, last night asked me, how do you die? And I said, well, you fall asleep and don't wake up. And she said, oh, but Nasim, that's her girlfriend's grandmother, died standing up. And I said, oh, I don't think so. She must have fallen down. She said, yes, I think so too. I think she must have fallen down. And then she said, and when do you die? I said, well, it's very hard to say. It can happen any time. And then she said, and when do you die? Well, me, you know. I'm sorry, I really can't give you an exact date, but it's, you know, it's in the future, but may not be so far in the future. Well, then she wandered off. I'm sure she's going to come back with more questions today. She has, in fact, asked her mother once already, what do you do after you're dead? Which I think is pretty smart for a small child, because we ask the same question, don't we? What do you do after you're dead? Because obviously you've got to do something. Well, what we're talking about, when we're talking about death, we're talking about the body. And that's why it belongs to the mindfulness of the body. We're not talking about the mind. And that was one of the questions we had yesterday, which I said is going to, you know, come in due course. The body dies. It's no longer functional. Just like a refrigerator or a car. I mean, cars particularly, after they've been around for what, for 20 years, I mean, they're really no longer functional. Most of them are not even functional after 10 years. So, it's dead. You've got to put it on the heap. It's finished. That's the same with the body. Eh? It's no longer functional. It's got too many things wrong with it. Or it's or the heart gives out. Well, of course it has to, you know. I mean, how can you die without the heart giving out? But there may be other primary causes. But that's it. That's all the death there is. Unless one's become enlightened. Then it's a different story. And the Buddha did say that on the deathbed is the best opportunity to become enlightened if one hasn't managed it beforehand. Because at the moment of death, and as I said before, everybody knows they're dying, and at the moment of death, there is resignation and peacefulness about it. One has to give up the ownership of the body. You just have to. You're compelled to. And you're compelled to do it peacefully, without rejecting that thought. And you have to give up the idea, it's me dying. Because you can feel that the body is losing all its strength and energy, but the mind is aware of it. So this is an excellent moment of becoming enlightened. The only thing that's wrong with it is that one can't enjoy it in this lifetime. So it's of course more favorable if we could do it in this lifetime. We can enjoy it at least. But if it's done on the deathbed, that's a very good time too for it, because we are compelled. Now, most people obviously don't do it. Mainly because they've never heard of it. Mainly because they haven't had any way of even thinking that way. There's no way that they could have even thought of it. They accept the fact that the body is no longer functional, but the letting go of the me and mine is not in it. Now, the awareness in the mind does not die. It remains. And it remains without a body. There is absolutely no reason why mind must have a body, other than in those realms which are human and below, where there is the necessity to have a body. Those realms which are beyond human, there are subtle bodies, much different from this one, not creating dukkha. That's why the devas forget to meditate, because they don't have enough dukkha. And then of course there are four realms where there's no body at all. So there is no... We are taking this for granted. We are taking all sorts of things for granted. Just because we have a body doesn't mean that you have to have a body. It just means that the human being has to have a body. A human being is not a human being without a body. But when the body is no longer functional, it's disappeared, it's dead, then, unless enlightenment has taken place, the mind with its awareness is there. And this awareness is an awareness which also includes two things of which one can actually say with a certain amount or quite an amount of certainty. One is that the awareness is different from the awareness we have now. That's quite certain. Unless we have lived a life which has been so full of breaking the precepts that the mind has no chance of becoming aware of the body having died. That's rare. Most people don't have that. Most people, if we think of ourselves, have at least tried to live according to precepts, and so the mind is quite aware of the fact the body is dead and has a different direction at that time. And the direction, now there are a number of books written about near-death experiences, very interesting. The first one that was written and that I read was by a Dr. Moody, and Life After Death, I think it's called. And it's people who have are clinically dead but are brought back to life, because we have all sorts of things we can do to bring people back, if we have artificial respiration or anything like that. And their experiences, practically without fail, have been one of seeing light and seeing beings which are willing to help and guide them. There's no reason why that should not be. And there's also no reason why one shouldn't be able to see that when one meditates. Not imagining, but seeing and knowing. So there's no reason why these people should be dreaming what they experienced. And in fact, it's so common an experience in these near-death experiences, then one has very little doubt, even if one hasn't had any experience like that themselves. So they feel very happy about it. But another thing which happens to practically all of them, and I thought that was very interesting, they didn't like to come back to life. They were very mad at the doctor. He worked too well. They would have just as soon have stayed where they were. But seeing that they did come back and now were alive again, they changed their lifestyle. They changed to having as a priority being loving and helpful to others. Now, I don't know why we need a near-death experience to recognize that. I mean, I'm aware that most people need it, but I mean, why? What for? Do we have to get into a terrible car accident in order to recognize that and then have some capable doctor pull us out of this again? That's totally unnecessary. We can think about it and find out now about it. And that would be very helpful. So this death which happens, which people are afraid of, is actually the end of this body. But it's certainly not the end of our me delusion. It's unless we're enlightened, and we're going to just sort of leave that out as a possibility right now, because then we don't have anything more to say. Thing is finished, enlightened, okay. But if that is not the case, and in most people's death experiences it will not be the case, then the me delusion is just as strong as it was when the body was there. It's no longer identified with this body, because that body is not there to be identified with, unless one has been breaking the precepts constantly, and then one is in a very bad state of not finding one's body. But that also is a minor consideration. So we are there, we have the me delusion, and therefore we have the craving to be. And that's how rebirth happens. We want to be. And as soon as the consciousness of wanting to be is there, then the place to be is found, and a being, the Buddha says, arises immediately upon conception. So there's no question whether it takes 3 months for a being to arise, 3 days, 6 months, 9 months. The moment of conception there's a being, according to the Buddha's words. Because the consciousness of I am is there. If that consciousness of I am wouldn't be there, that being could not arise again. So we bring with us our karmic resultants, and we'll talk about that another time, because that's another topic, the karma. At the moment we may have had a bit of a view of losing the body but not losing the mind. The mind which continues to say, I am, but does not continue to identify with this particular body, and does not continue to identify with being that particular person, but continues to identify with I am, which makes it possible to arise as a being which looks different and has different family and so on. Now we're going to do a contemplation. Before we do, I might like to stretch your legs. And please put the attention on the breath for just a few moments. I'd like you to have a look at the decay of your own body. Now you might look at its aging, what it looked like before, at teeth, which decay, any changes that you might have noticed, any loss of strength or energy, and see whether you dislike this decay or don't pay any attention to it, or are actually taking it into account in your thought processes. Do you dislike it, or do you ignore it, or do you take it into account? And now take a look at the diseases of the body. Now disease also means dis-ease, not being at ease in the body. Recapitulate any illnesses you may have had, minor or major, and any unease that you find in the body. And then investigate whether you've had any jurisdiction over that, or whether the body was acting according to its own rhythm. And if you find that the body acts according to its own nature, then inquire, why do you think you own it? And now try to imagine, visualize, conjure up your own death. Try to see it as part of life. Try to see yourself dead. How do you feel about it? Would you rather it didn't happen? Is that sensible? And then find out what it is makes you wish that it wouldn't happen, or wouldn't happen very soon. What is it that you're most clinging to? Now think of those people who are closest to you. whom you find most important in your life. And then remember that they too are liable to die. And then investigate your reaction. Can I accept it, or am I rejecting it? Do I want to keep what I think I've got? Or can I gently and slowly recognize the impermanent nature of all that exists and not create a great deal of dukkha for myself? Investigate whether it's possible to love without clinging. Now think of every night that you fall asleep as a small death, and the next morning as rebirth. During the night, that person whom you think you are is not available. Use that as a springboard for recognizing what it means not to identify.